Yeah,
probably. Yeah.
Hello, everyone. We're going to start the intro so that we don't have to loop music anymore. My name is Chris Kies. I'm a filmmaker from Nashville, Tennessee, and I'm a wet bandit.
I'm Rick Fox. I'm a aspiring author, and the wet bandit stole my opening.
All right, and we are joined by our recurring guests slash co-hosts.
My name is Binge. I guess I'm the guest slash co-host now. Yay!
No, no, one of you is the guest and one of you is the co-host. And
Binge is my co-host.
We're going to actually break a pool cue in half and give you both halves, and whoever survives
this
is...
This is the wrong movie, Rick.
What movie is that from?
It's from Stand By Me.
Okay.
Princess Diaries 2.
They made a second one?
Yes.
All right. They did.
I'm Josh Birch. I'm the co-host of the co-host guest combo. And I am a bunch of marbles on some stairs, if I guess correctly.
I think that's in there.
Close.
I know there are a lot of stair-involved traps in this. I don't remember
there are
if there's
micro machines involved.
I'm a stair trap. There you go.
There you go.
Yeah. And you know what also is a thing that we will naturally discuss and bring up as a group?
That we're opinionated?
It ain't it.
Yay.
Oh man,
that was bad. Retry.
No, we can't. We can't retry because
we're opinionated.
That was better.
Oh, my ears hurt. Ow. All right. So this week, you know, it's happy holidays. Enjoy your time with your family and your friends. Watch a lot of good movies this week. Like, we are watching Home Alone 1.
Oh, I thought we were watching Halloween. Oh, I'm not prepared. I'm sorry.
What's even called? That would have been a really good one.
That would have been a good one.
We should have watched The Nightmare Before Christmas.
We should have watched Nightmare Before Christmas as part of our month of spooks and also for the Christmas
episode. Before Christmas.
I know.
Anyway, Rotten Tomatoes gives Home Alone a 55%. It is directed by John Hughes and stars the one, the only, Kevin McAllister.
Chris.
No, that's not his name. Macaulay Culkin.
I'm shocked.
That's something that no one will get.
A little treat out there for all you audio listeners.
Here's the synopsis. An 8-year-old troublemaker must protect his home from a pair of burglars when he is accidentally left home by his family during Christmas vacation.
I guess I'll start with, I've never seen this movie. I didn't even know that there were sequels until today.
Which cracked me up.
Oh, man.
Obviously, I've seen the picture of Macaulay Culkin doing the real iconic face that's on the front of the box and all the poster art and everything like that. And I know that I've heard the premise before, which he gets left at home and comes up with goofy traps to prevent some bandits from stealing everything, right?
Yeah.
So I know the gist of what's in this movie, but I've never seen it before. So I'm looking forward to sitting down and watching it for the first time. What are your guys' experience or thoughts on the movie having... I assume all three of you have seen this.
Yeah, I've seen this movie literally hundreds of times. It was this movie and the sequel were among the movies that I literally wore the tape out.
Is this a classic, like we watch this every Christmas kind of thing for you?
I didn't celebrate Christmas growing up, so no.
Wait, what?
No, I didn't.
So you've watched this hundreds of times.
Literally hundreds.
Chris, are you really familiar? Are you on the same level of fandom as Rick is with this movie?
I really liked it a lot as a kid. If this was not a situation where you had not seen the movie, I would not really jump at the chance to watch this movie again.
Okay.
I should point out that I also have not seen this in probably 10 years.
Let me ask you guys, do you think this is something that you liked as much as you did because you watched it as a young kid? Like, do you expect it to hold up when we watch it now?
No. This movie, it's really grounded in the shock of a lot of the physical comedy and the quirks of the ideas he comes up with. And I think this particular brand of comedy is something that if you're exposed to for years, several times over a long period of time, it just does not hold up well. But I'm trying to look at it objectively.
I'm not dead on the inside like Chris, so I'm going to enjoy it.
Yeah.
But I mean, honestly, if I remember correctly, there's a lot of... I'm curious to see how I will look at it as an adult because there are so many... adult sides of the story. Like, you see a lot of the parents dealing with their kid being gone, like that kind mm-hmm. of thing. And I'm curious to see if that will hit me any differently now than it did when I was like, okay, fast forward, they're not killing anyone in this scene.
One thing I think is funny is that John Hughes is the director of this movie, and this is like his biggest success. But I feel like it's also the movie that everyone forgets John Hughes directed the most, because he's so well known for his like teenager stories, like Breakfast Club, 16 Candles.
Oh, all the boring ones.
Even like Uncle Buck. No, I love those movies.
I love Uncle Buck.
Oh, Uncle Buck.
I remember Uncle Buck
good.
Very vaguely. Actually, the only thing I remember about Uncle Buck is the I can circumcise a gnat with this thing.
What? I've never seen Uncle Buck.
I'm not giving you context for that.
John Candy. Never mind. I'm not going to say anything else. We should just watch Home Alone so yep. we don't spoil anything for Josh. How does that sound?
Oh, we need to know Binge's past
yeah.
with the movie.
Oh, Binge.
I actually recently watched this movie. I watched it probably a week and a half ago with my girlfriend, just as part of like, oh, it's Christmas. We should watch a Christmas movie.
Oh, Binge has a girlfriend.
Rude. Let me finish. No, there are things about it that are dated, obviously, but I still really enjoyed it. Some things are not as, like you said, like a lot of the shock and stuff with the things that are happening as an adult. You just see it as like, okay, that's obviously going to kill someone. But it's still enjoyable for me.
I do think this is one of those movies, watching someone who hasn't seen it before, or at least in a long time watching it, is like part of the fun of watching mm-hmm. it.
Yeah.
Because of how like creative some of the set pieces are.
Did it hold up for you since you watched it a week ago? Do you think it held up for you in the same way that it was enjoyable and entertaining as a child? I would say that it's not as enjoyable or entertaining, but it still holds like up like 90-95%.
Cool. I look forward to watching it.
All right, let's do it.
All right, let's go.
When the McAllister family left on their Christmas vacation.
Did we miss the flight? No, you just made it. Yeah!
They forgot one small thing.
Have yourself.
I've had a terrible feeling. Christmas.
Did you lock up?
Let yourself be light.
Do we set the timers on the lights?
Mm-hmm. What else could we be forgetting?
Our troubles will be ours.
Kevin!
Home Alone.
All right. So, we just watched a bunch of grown men get maimed and tortured.
Just two.
Woo!
Not a bunch, just two.
Yeah, really just two, I guess.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Christmas spirit. Rick, you are the lore master. Why don't you go ahead and start out the conversation?
What did you think of Joe Pesci trying to get people's attention at the house when everything is chaotic?
I feel like I always forget that that's a thing. Like, I always forget that Joe Pesci is the cop in the beginning of the movie.
I thought it was funny. I thought it set the tone for the movie, too, with the family kind of running around and being oblivious to the guy who's standing in their front door.
I specifically remember being like 10 and watching the movie and finally going, wait a minute, that's the guy at the end of the movie.
I had the same experience. As a kid, I straight up always forget until we first see the wet band. It's like, oh, that's the same actor. I think as a kid, I didn't even realize they were supposed to be the same character. Mm-hmm. I was just like, oh, they got the same actor and they both have gold teeth.
Like the tooth gleam.
Yeah, no. I was dumb as a kid.
Yeah, I wasn't very sophisticated in the head.
I'm smarter than you guys. I caught it on my first time watching.
We're all very impressed that as a 20-something adult, you were able to catch the subtleties that this movie had working in its plot.
The subtleties of Joe Pesci playing two people.
No, not even. Just one person.
I know.
Two occupations.
But right. I do like that they don't, like... Like, this is clearly a good family thing, and that's kind of over the top, but they don't over the top, like, make Kevin feel terrible about everything. Like, there's reasons stuff are going on. It makes sense in context, like, all of that.
I don't know.
As the youngest member of a large family, that felt very real to me.
And in the moment, like, and here's the thing.
Even to the point where his uncle's being a dick?
Oh, yeah. I had a good uncle. But there were also horrible people in my family that would be terrible dicks.
Here's the thing for me. My biggest wall with enjoying this movie, unfortunately, is Kevin for most of it. Like,
really?
There are parts in this movie where I find Kevin very endearing and very fun to watch. But pretty much the entire first half, like, I hate Kevin. Like, I just do not like him.
Why? I hate Kevin.
Why?
That doesn't make any
He's just
sense.
Getting crapped on for the first half of the movie.
Yeah, he literally, like...
He deserves it. He's a what? Jerk.
What? Kevin? How does he deserve it?
He's 8 years old.
He yeah. is so annoying.
He is not.
He's spending the entire time going, they won't let me watch the movie.
Yeah, because
they're being actual jerks to him.
Everybody in the family, except for him, is watching a movie, and his mom said, no, you can't, even though it's like not rated R. Like, when they're you still not, can't watch it.
When they're not busy calling him like retarded and stuff in French, to be fair. But still, like...
Pretty much up until... The look what you did, you little jerk. I had no sympathy for him. And the reason why
is because you're a horrible person.
maybe. Because legitimately, like, the whole appeal of this movie to most people is Macaulay Culkin in this movie, I think. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, even on child actor standards, like, he's pretty good.
Yeah.
But
he's pretty
there's
amazing
also,
for child actor.
Like, I wouldn't say amazing. Like, there were some things in there that I feel like he hammed up way too much.
For, like, an 8-year-old, I'm 100%.
But I mean,
especially
here,
I gave him
the benefit of the doubt there. So, like, you know, for a child actor, he's better than most. But no, I still wouldn't say he's even good at that point.
That's because you're wrong. Like, no. he is nailing exactly
so
what this movie is attempting to do. Like,
he's better
regardless,
than several adult actors.
Yeah, regardless of, like, movie. How you feel about the like, whether or not hammy was the right move, he's doing what I'm sure John Hughes told him to do perfectly.
Well, I would then recant that with saying that I think that some of those hammy moments were not the right move.
You're a hard
person. He may have done exactly what John Williams wanted him to do, but not John Williams, John Hughes. Like, I never really cared for this bit. And
I'm
for
sure
the
all of our audience knows
and
exactly
for the
what
break,
you just did.
Yes, the poster bit,
the thing when he puts on the after show,
like I like how during the movie we're like, maybe he did shave.
No, I'm okay make with that it better because for me. It's him putting on aftershave. If it was him like doing a camera take, like there's people breaking into my house. Oh no!
But he does stuff like that too.
No, but then that would be too hammy. But because it's him, like. You know, he's pretending to be all grown up and do grown up things. And part of that is him like, yeah, I'm going to do what my dad does. And I'm going to pretend to shave and put on deodorant and all this kind of stuff.
But but for me, there are moments where like he looks directly at the camera and does like a little eyebrow raising. And like,
that's not his fault.
And I don't know. I just thought it was a little like
in a movie
where a lot of its best bits are the most Looney Tunes bits. Like there were some that were just. Too goofy for me.
I still don't blame Macaulay Culkin for those. Like, like I know exactly what you're talking about when he looks, when he says, I'm home alone, and then does like the little doink, doink, like eyebrow raise at the camera. It's like, he didn't ad-lib that. Like, they told him to do little eyebrow raises at the camera.
I think that's a fair counterpoint. It might be more of a, like, John Hughes thing, where it's like, mm-hmm. I don't like that decision that the storytellers made to have this joke given in this way.
Sure.
And John and Macaulay Culkin may have done exactly what they asked him to do perfectly, but it doesn't change the fact that I still don't care for it.
I would say fair enough, but I don't feel like being fair to that. But
well, I can counter it with things I liked that he did.
I would, well, let's kind of go on back through the movie because, you know, we don't need to go. Do you guys want to just go through performances? Because that may be a better way to do it.
I think in the climax, I do not want to hit every single stunt and say what I thought
that
of
is
it.
Way
there
too
are a couple of highlights I do want to hit.
Oh,
though.
I think it'd be fun to each say what our favorite and least favorite were.
We could do that.
Sure.
But yeah, like, you know, I like all the goofy, wacky moments when they're, you know, the parents are freaking out like, oh, God, we overslept and it, you know, hits fast forward on the tape, it feels like, and they're all moving faster and all that. I enjoy all that goofiness that's present throughout the movie. And I don't see any reason to like single out Kevin's moments of that because it's present pretty much everywhere in the movie.
It's just
I don't know what that means.
That style of this is larger than life. This is a thing that doesn't actually
how
happen.
How hammy it is.
Yeah, it's everywhere.
I think that's why. And it may just be a taste thing, but I think that's why for me, like this was never like a staple in my house. Huh. Because like just not something I care for. What I cared for was the execution of basically the violent climactic third act. Like that is, I remember actually... Every time we watch this movie, suggesting we skip to the end because those are the only bits I really bought because they have that sort of like slightly like not even slightly that Three Stooges like vibe to it where you're actually seeing like pain-based comedy, which the only other one I can think of is the Aftershave one,
but
ironically.
But that still follows in the line of being just as hammy and goofy as the other bits. Like, it still falls into the same
when
tone.
Joe Pesci runs out of the house with his head literally on fire, you're not
and
saying
dives
that's hammy.
Into the snow.
It's just different.
It is not. It's not different. It is clearly the same thing.
And I like that you referenced the Three Stooges, which is like their level of slapstick comedy is like
very down to earth.
Epitome of ham.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying is that when it's actually like the violence, like physical comedy bits, like the hamminess works for me. But when it's just like Macaulay Culkin's scared, so he runs to the camera, then he runs into his room, that's the type of hamminess that I just don't buy. Like, that's what I meant by they're different. And that's why I like the violent bits. Because to me, that's when it works. Like, hamminess works when it's physical comedy for me. But it does not work when it's just like, whoa! Like, it's just not.
That's a part of physical comedy. It's the Wile E. Coyote holding up a sign that says, oops, as before he falls off a cliff. Like, that's part of it.
Right. And I'm saying that that's the bit that I just don't care for.
Oh. All right. Okay.
I'm not claiming anything objective here. I'm just saying I don't like it.
Okay, fair. That's,
which we've
that's
done
fair
in every other movie, so.
I can't take that, you know, I can't gainsay you there. But, so yeah. Do you just want to have us three talk about the parts before that and then let you come in on the
I'm just going to interject and say I like it or don't like it every now and then, but it's fine.
Let's see. So, okay, what do you guys think of the way that his mom kind of deals with, like, when she suddenly realizes this? Because that is kind of a weird moment that I always was kind of, as a kid, I just kind of ignored that part. But I like that, you know, they kind of deal with this in a pretty serious way. Like, they take all the steps you would expect someone to take.
She freaks out realistically.
Yeah.
I agree. Like, the reaction is correct. I've never like gone on a road trip with a group of people or like gone on a youth retreat or anything and been like, oh, okay, well, we have everyone when we don't. Like,
well,
she asked for the headcount. Like, she put the responsibility of making sure that everyone was there on her, it would
the
look
oldest
like
sister.
Her oldest daughter,
yeah,
who is probably in her mid-teens.
And
correct.
I
and
loved
they still go
that bit. I forget that bit. I forget how they forget him every time I watch this movie. And it's just that I feel like everyone knew that annoying kid across the street who was just always trying to like butt into every situation and mm-hmm. be like, see, you're driving a car there. My dad just got a car. It's a little better than our uncle's, but our uncle's has manuals, so it can, you know, shift a little differently. Have you ever driven a manual? I like love how obnoxious that kid is.
That kid does nail it. And I do like that he has either the same or a very similar hat to the one that Kevin is wearing later. So it makes perfect sense that she would like tap his head and be like, okay, Kevin's right there.
Right.
Yeah. But like, I just don't see, like, I can understand like the mom being, okay, everybody is accounted for and they get in the vans or whatever and leave. But how do you go through the airport, get on the plane?
Because they're having to run through it. And it's not like, you know, airports now where you actually have to stop and go through security,
right,
and all that.
And they also, and you also have to remember that they have, what, like 10 other kids that aren't hers as well, too, with all the cousins.
But it's one of her kids that it's just
but it's gonna
you
get
do a final head count before you get on the plane. We all, like, every.
No, they're late to the plane. They barely get to the ticket booth in time. And
but
she's
you
like,
can,
yeah,
but,
get in there.
But the parent, like, they can stop and say, is this everybody? And then just do boom, 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 and it's done.
Yeah, but
no,
under the circumstances, it is not.
Yeah, no,
all I'm saying is that it's not unreasonable. That's my only thing that I
would say.
You had kids and forget
getting,
them somewhere.
Getting to the airport, I can understand it just because of how quick everything is. But as soon as you're at the airport and you can literally see that there aren't 15 people or however many they have, it's like, oh, we're missing somebody. Like, it's just, I don't.
In a group that large, I give it a little bit of grace. I would also say that in this movie, I would never actually like remove any points for that, because I feel like that's thinking about it really hard.
No, like, I don't remove points from it, but me as an adult, like going on like trips where there were that many people and disorganization, like. We never lost or forgot anybody. And even if we were behind, I was just like,
you also don't have 10 kids to keep up with and like are late for your trip to France.
I mean, when your uncle's trying to steal everything that's made of actual crystal that he can get his hands on, it's really hard to be distracted by
it. Did he actually steal
it? Yes. Well, yeah, in the plane, he's like, this is real crystal, steal it. Then the stewardess shows up and is like, wine? He's like,
fill it up.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
He's just the worst. But I don't think it's like an actual plot hole or anything.
No, it's a funny thing to think about
and be like, oh, yeah, this movie doesn't make sense, but it's not like a glaring issue.
It's not like they do it twice, guys.
Oh, there's a sequel.
is that what happens in the sequel?
Please. Yeah.
What? Please, no, it's just called Home Alone 2. It doesn't imply
Escape from New York.
It's actually in a way more egregious, if I remember correctly. Yeah. But we'll get there next week. After all this stuff has gone down and all that, you know, Kevin gets to where he's ordering the pizza and, you know, watching this movie that he clearly shouldn't be watching. Angels with Filthy Souls, which is just the best name for a noir movie that I've ever heard. And I desperately wish that this was a real movie that I could watch.
I really do, too. Like, I remember that. I don't think I realized it wasn't an actual real movie until, like, I was already an adult. Yes, so I was like, all right, what is this movie? How do I find it? And then just eventually finally Googling it and being like, oh, a fictional film made for Home Alone.
Okay, so this is the best thing about that to me, though. John Hughes went crazy with that. Like, he got the right era of film to use to make that. He got all the props were era correct, like, all of it. Everything in that scene, even the down to the gun, were all, like, perfect replicas or things that had been used in movies made at the time that movie was supposed to be made. Like, he really put a ton of effort into making that, what, 20, 30 seconds of movie into something that was, you know, period accurate, which is amazing to me.
That is insane. Like, I just, like, I can expect that from, like, some directors where it's, like, they're known for that. But, like, John Hughes, not really very specific detail-oriented guy that I remember.
Yeah, definitely.
In any of the movies of his that I've seen, it's all based on things. Not
those 80s movies were very period accurate to the 80s, right?
Well, they were made in the 80s.
Jerk.
Wait, really?
I'm going to make a period piece set in the 2010s. It's going to be the amazing. Teens. Mm-hmm. The teens, as they will call it later. The 20-teens.
Right.
Can we just loop back around to the 20s soon? Because I really want to be there and, like, start wearing
suits. You realize that when it's the 20s, we're not just going to suddenly start being like, hey, kid! Like, that's how they talk in the 20s.
Like my Australians?
Yes.
Hi, mate.
Well, thank God. that would be terrible.
I was trying to do like a newsy thing, and it just did not turn out right at all.
I want everyone, like, January 1st, 2020, everyone has to start talking like a New York gangster. Just everyone.
Oh, I'm going to stick out so bad. It's just going to, oi, it just becomes a weird accent.
I don't know
like
why
all
you started
my other
New
accents.
York gangster with oi, oi. That's not New York gangster.
So, okay, what do you guys think of, I didn't notice this, you know, growing up, but I really like how gradual this movie goes. Like, you know, you really have Kevin go through some different stages throughout the movie. And, you know, as a kid, I didn't really put together what was going on there, but I did enjoy watching the whole movie. Like, the best part was definitely the end, but I never, like, actually skipped just to the end to watch that part alone. I actually really enjoy seeing Kevin kind of go from being this, you know, constantly talking to everyone, trying to get everyone to do everything for him. And he does kind of have this, like, I don't know how to, you know, keep myself alive thing at the beginning of the movie. But by the end of the movie, I like that he is kind of, it's not like just an instant, his parents are gone and he's taking care of himself thing. It's a very gradual process. And there's definite, like, at first he's just eating junk food and then he's eating slightly healthier. And then he's, you know, taking care of the whole house. Like, I like that progression for him throughout the movie.
Right. I think they do the whole thing really well. Like, even with the wet criminals or whatever they call
them. The
wet bandits.
Wet bandits. Even with them.
Have you never seen this movie before?
I haven't. You see them slowly escalating. And I think they do that well. They make the climax of the movie feel like you've actually, like, progressed well to get there, and it makes sense where it's at despite being ridiculous.
Right, yeah. I think that works actually surprisingly well.
Because if they had just cut to him making a whole bunch of traps, it wouldn't have worked without you seeing him start to become more and more resourceful and more self-sustaining, I guess.
Right, he has some very human reactions to people trying to break into his house before that, and it all plays in very well. I like how...
First time he's scared, and he just runs and hides.
Yeah, and that keeps him from, you know, having the police come in. I like that interconnectedness of everything that's going on in this movie.
Right.
That's something I always appreciate.
I think structurally it is, like, a very sound, like, arc in the whole, over the course of the whole movie. Like, you can see, like, he's learning things as he goes on for the movie, like you mentioned, Josh, and that he's actually maturing to be a completely different kid by the end of the movie that he was in the beginning of the movie. And I think that's admirable.
Okay. Is that sort of what you were talking about, though, about his acting?
No.
Or do you
that's
that
100.
Part?
No, the structure is 100% good. And I think that's the disconnect.
No, that's not what I was asking. I was just asking if you liked his acting throughout that part.
I do not like how some of the bits are sold in the first half of the movie, because they aren't these, like, Three Stoogey bits. They're just like, little goofy, and when it's not physical comedy, that just does not, like, work for me at all. It just feels like it's too far off the scale.
Like,
whereas when I have physical comedy, I have something to react to, because, like, I'm like, oh man, that would hurt so much. It's funny to me that he pushes his head into the snow because his head is on fire. But when it's just like, I'm really scared, that's not something I attach to as easily, because I don't resonate with that.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's the difference. And that's why I can look at it structurally and I'm like, oh, like this, like as a story is like great. Like this makes a ton of sense. I just wish I was more along the ride for Macaulay Culkin.
Is it only the over the top bits that you don't like?
I can see where you're coming from for one specific scene that stands out that I would agree with you, which is when he gets scared and his reaction is to like put his arms above his head, kind of like flailing wildly and be like, ah!
Yeah, oh my gosh.
Upstairs, up and down the hallway before going to hide. Like, yeah. I can get that as being too far over the top. But like when he's running away from the van later, I don't think that's too over the top.
No, fine. That's not that over the top at all.
Him running away from the cop after he's accidentally shoplifted. I think the sliding on the ice is a little bit,
that's fine. That's great.
I kind of like the goofiness of how bad it is, but it is bad. Like it works for me because it's so goofy in the way that it's shot.
That piece specifically, because I do actually remember him during that scene. Like, he's scared, he runs with his arms, like, you know, he does, like, a lap around the kitchen table, comes upstairs, goes down the hallway just to the camera, screams, and then runs to go hide under his parents' bed. Yeah, I remember that scene specifically, and I'd agree with you that scene is too hammy. I don't think the rest of the first half is too hammy. I just think that one particular bit.
And I would caveat that the other scene you mentioned, the ice rink one, like, I would say, as a whole, that bit works for me, but it's not because he's sliding on the ice and it's funny that he's sliding on the ice super far. What works for me is the punchline, which is actually this mini scene that follows immediately after that, where he looks at the toothbrush and goes, I'm a criminal.
Yeah.
It's like after this huge set piece, I mean, it's not huge, but it's like big comparatively for like everything else that's happened in the movie so far. Like the takeaway is not that I can't believe I slid through ice on my knees through a bunch of pedestrians and ran and like evaded an adult. It's, oh man, I stole a toothbrush. Like that's what makes it funny.
Yeah.
And it's that it humanizes him also. Mm-hmm. And that makes me actually get a little more on the Kevin train. And I like those bits more than I like the bits.
Fair
enough.
So
I hope that makes sense.
So when you're saying when he's not hammy, you are liking his acting. Is that correct?
Yes, actually. And I would caveat that with like another scene that I think is like really, really, really good. Oh man, I just forgot it though. I was hoping I'd remember
it in the
middle
scene?
Of my sentence. Yeah, but I didn't want to get there yet.
Okay.
I was thinking of a different one.
I like
Another scene that I really liked with him that is similar to that is actually when he goes and he buys groceries and he has that conversation with the cashier and she's like, are you here alone? And he's like talking like an adult.
Yeah.
But you know he's also like passing bluff checks and he ends it by saying the most non-adult thing, which is also another punchline.
Yeah.
Like the moments where the punchline is in the dialogue that is supported by the action of this movie are the bits that I think work the strongest in the first half.
Yeah,
that makes sense. I agree with that. So what do you guys think of the Wet Bandits in general? Like before we get to them as the getting to them getting the crap beat out of them. Like, how do you guys like them as just, you know, background characters and all that?
I mean, I would say that the Wet Bandits and the mom are the best performances in this movie by far, in my opinion. Like, I mean, if we're not going to wait Macaulay Culkin for being a child actor, like 100% those characters are my favorites to watch.
I would definitely give you that for the Wet Bandits. I find the mom very believable and I like all of her reactions, but for the most part, she's there for me to ground the film. I don't actually enjoy particularly watching what's going on with her, but I see why it's needed for the film.
Right. She's the only character that I really like care about. If I'm being honest, like, I don't care about Kevin. Like, I mean, there's a couple moments that humanize him, but I'm way more invested in the mom reuniting with her son because I really believe that she's distraught over it. And I don't really I'm not really sold by the danger Kevin is in, you know, like even at the end when, you know, they pin him up on the door, I'm just kind of like, oh, he got kind of caught, you
it
know,
does like, show that the snow guy is coming in quickly right there, like to keep you from getting too edgy there.
Yeah, that's true. But even then, I'm just way more invested in the mother's plight than I am in Kevin.
What's interesting?
I'm not invested in the mom nearly as much as I am Kevin. Like, yeah. the resolution for me is seeing the repair of the relationship that was damaged at the beginning when he fought with his family. And that comes through the mom being the first to arrive, but I still, I'm not feeling the tension because, oh man, I want this mom to get back to her son. How's she going to do it? Is she going to get a plane? Is she going to get in a car? Like, how's she going to get there? It's, you know, Kevin has matured and I want that family, you know, I want the family to be whole again.
Yeah, I like how gradual his desire to have his family back is. Like, and I like that even once he seems to be clearly taking care of himself, even though, you know, obviously he couldn't do that forever. But Even once he's gotten to sort of the height of his ability to be responsible, that's when he's also gotten to the height of his emotional desire to have his family back. And I like that a lot.
It all makes sense. Like, I don't disagree with anything y'all are saying. I think that the difference is that, like, I think that the conflict that the mom has is a little more fun and interesting for me to follow. Maybe not, fun might not be the right word, because watching him put a cutout of Michael Jordan on a train so he can evade the Wet Bandits is objectively a more fun concept. But I don't know. I care about more? The mother.
I
wanting
relate
to
a little. Like, that's I understand. I'm relating a lot more with her plight, I mean, than Kevin's at this point in my life. Like,
maybe that's it. Maybe it's one of those things where, like, when you're a kid, like, it's designed to perfectly tap into where you are then. I mean, when I was a
you're
teenager,
you're scared of everything that's going to be like, what happens if, like, I'm home alone and somebody comes to rob the house? Like,
yeah, maybe.
You have that feeling, but, like, as an adult, you're just like, oh, crap.
But I think a big thing for me is that the first time I really noticed, like, I think it's Catherine O'Connor, her acting is that first scene where she's putting him on the third floor. And she's like, well, maybe you'll say that and it'll come true. Like, there's just some, like, really subtle stuff I feel like she's doing there that makes her seem so real. And that just seems like such a mom thing to say. It's like, really think about what you're saying. And then when he does that, I imagine that's probably going to be a real problem with when it comes to parenthood. I don't know that problem yet, but that seems like something that I probably did at some point and was horrible to my parents, you know. Yeah, but I didn't realize how evil I was being. And that's
real. I don't someday if I have kids, they're going to listen to these podcasts probably. I'm sorry, I'm such a dork, kids.
I'm not. You're welcome.
I'm really not.
These
actually.
Hobbies, you'll enjoy hopefully, them forever.
Hopefully, I have ingrained the ways of the dork into you.
Anyway,
yes.
Anyway, this is a movie where a big part of me. It's hard for me to I'm not gonna. It's not necessarily hard for me to feel like I'm separating my objective criticism and my personal taste, but it's hard for me to imagine a world where if it's not Home Alone, I would have enjoyed some of those hammy moments even a little. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like I would give it a pass because, oh, I know it's Macaulay Culkin. Of course it's a little hammy. Stuff like that. So I'm trying to look for bits that are a little more attuned to what I would 100% say, yes, this was good, because I don't want to just focus on the stuff that I think is negative and let that seem like I had this taste bias. You know what I'm saying?
I can kind of get where you're coming from. I think what's interesting for me is just how opposite I mean, obviously it's you and me, so obviously I'm going to come at it from the other direction. But to me, what I really liked about this is how outside of my taste and how outside of what is common within comedies and really movies today. Like, I like how hammy it is and how, you know, fourth wall breaky it is. It has a very unique feel to it, or maybe it's just a specifically like early 90s feel to it that, and maybe it is just nostalgia, but it really, I really enjoy it and I really like it just on every level. Like, there's not much about this movie that I genuinely can say I dislike. It's not perfect and it's not going to like win awards in my mind, but what it is, it does, you know, perfectly, not to spoil my later review. But yeah, like even with the mom and with Kevin, to kind of bring it back to that, for me, everything that she does, like, she's kind of a character, but all it does is emphasize what's going on with Kevin for me and makes me want him to succeed more. So it really, for me, emphasizes Kevin's character rather than making her character matter more to me.
Oh man. Like, she's definitely like,
she's
the conflict I care about
nailing
most.
It on the acting. I'll definitely say that. Like,
sure.
The desperation on her face is very clear in several scenes. Like, especially the one that always comes to mind for me is when she's trying to bargain her way onto the plane with the elderly couple.
I just like giving them everything she's got on her.
Yeah, I love that. And I love how like the old man is being a jerk, but then at the end he's like, oh, all right.
Yeah.
Right.
And I do enjoy like her and John Candy together. Like that, like, it's so small, but when they're on the U-Haul riding together, like, it is just like, they both feel so genuine, like they're just two normal people talking about what happened, as opposed to like, oh, they're acting and hamming it up at some of the parts, but it really sounds real.
I love John Candy.
Yes.
Like,
Who doesn't, honestly?
Oh my gosh. he's been great, and I can't think of any movie with a John Candy role or cameo that I wasn't like into John Candy being
Cool
in.
Runnings.
Oh,
no. That was awesome.
Can we watch Cool Runnings?
I'd be all right with
that. Oh, man.
Have you seen it?
Yeah, I love sports movies.
And that would be a great twist. Oh, no. I haven't
seen Cool Runnings.
What?
It's so good.
Anyway, yeah. we're actually moving quickly towards the end of the movie if you're talking about John Candy and them together, and a lot happens in the middle there. I do like the Wet Bandits. I like the way that Joe Pesci scopes out the neighborhood. I'm like, you know what? That's actually like...
really
that's
smart.
Pretty,
yeah,
that's a pretty clever idea and a way of scoping out the houses you plan on hitting later. And the fact that they just kind of go through and don't really have any regard for the houses at all. I commented while watching when the dude stops up the sink and starts like leaving the sinks on. I was like, "Oh man, that's really rude." And then like 30 seconds later, he gets in the car and Joe Pesci's like, "Oh man, that's really rude."
Yeah, I do like that. And yeah. I like that they get comeuppance for that at the end of the movie.
Mm-hmm, right.
Like that, there's so much about the things that happened at the beginning of this movie that tie into things that happen later. And I'm always on board with that. That to me is a mark of a very good movie. If you can tie things in that way.
Right. Even to the point of like real small, subtle things. Like within the first like 5 minutes of the movie, when Kevin's on the bed bugging his mom and his dad comes in and he's like, "Hey, you know what? Something you can do? You can pick up your toys because your aunt stepped on them and almost broke an ankle." It's yeah. like that's really tiny, and you probably won't pick up on it if it's your first time watching it.
Even tinier than that, when he jumps on the bed eating popcorn later, when he hides under the bed, there's still popcorn under the bed.
Is right. there really?
Yeah,
I
there
didn't
is.
Notice that. That's awesome.
I noticed that for the first time in this watching.
Yeah, like, it's small things like that that just make it feel complete. Like, these things were planned out ahead of time. It makes jokes that could seem really slapstick and silly, it makes them feel like, oh no, these were planned, and even though they're goofy, like, these were all intentional things that they put in here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about, I think there's only one thing that I have left to talk about before we get into the, you know, the slapstick and the fun at the end. But what do you guys think of his conversation with the snow shovel guy at the church there?
I really liked it.
As an adult, I love that a lot more than I did as a kid. As a kid, I was just like, okay, we're so close. Here, yeah, we're so close. I came here for the end and what is going on. But as an adult, and I think Chris also agrees, is like, I have a lot more appreciation for this scene just because it gives like a little bit more of like, act like you see him grow.
Yeah,
like,
definitely.
From this scene and throughout the entire first part of the movie.
Mine's similar. I do agree for the most part. Like, that's how I feel about it. But even as a kid, like, I can't stress enough how little I cared for, like, the first half of this movie as a kid. Like, at all. But even as a kid, I found, like, that twist where he's in the church and the snow shovel guy is in there and they have that really like touching conversation to be truly magical. Like I found that to be like, I feel like that's what grounds this as a Christmas movie. Like there are some Christmas movies, like they just take place on Christmas. And they talk about how great Christmas is. No, Die Hard's great as a Christmas movie for this reason.
Shame on you, Rick.
But like there's like, but,
sorry, I've enjoyed
but
it.
Like movies that are just like, oh, Christmas. Like I'm not about that. But this scene, like this sense of like, it just instills like hope in people. And the fact that it's, you know, sort of circumvented by all of this Christmas that's around it, it makes it really thematically like tie itself together really well. And that's what I think makes this movie last, actually. That plot element to me. Without that, this really isn't much of a classic to me. It's like a one-off, like it's really fun. It's got some really funny moments. But like, you know, so was like Black Sheep, the Chris Farley movie. But I wouldn't call that a classic.
That is a classic.
I love that movie. I love it too.
Amazing.
I love it too, but I'm not gonna. What?
I've never seen Black Sheep.
Tommy Boy? Have you seen Tommy Boy?
Tommy Boy, I would say, is a comedy.
They're the same movie.
They are not. They are not.
Okay, is that the one where like rich son has to like go prove himself to his dad? Okay, yeah, I have seen that.
I love that movie too.
But like the classics, they need the classics need heart for them to be lasting, I think. And I think that this is the heart of this movie. I think it's, frankly, it touches me more than the resolution between him and his family.
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, I think that's great, but it's not, like, I would say that that's shallow compared to what they did with the snow shovel guy.
For me, it's not so much this moment in particular that does that, but the moment when Kevin is at the very end of the movie, looks through the window and sees that, you know, that guy has gotten back together with his family. Like, that's the moment that really hits me, specifically. I really like that. And this conversation is so good because of the way they've set it up, of him just being so scary throughout the rest of this movie. And then he just turns on a dime, and he suddenly becomes this kindly, old, grandfatherly guy. Like, I love that moment. It's so good.
And I love the way that the conversation feels authentic, right? Like it feels the dialogue and the way they wrote it is a 60 something year old man talking to a sarcastic 8-year old.
Yeah.
Like it fits and it works really well.
And I mean, they could have easily put like a music cue to like make you think, oh, he's the scary guy, and then take it away and add like joyful music, and it would have been so dumb. But instead, they just like let it play out. And the only thing in the background is the choir, which, you know, that sort of thing can go either way in a lot of instances. Right. It can be sort of like ethereal and alien, but it could also be like really like endearing and intimate. And I think in a way, like this is the perfect way to like support that type of scene, because Kevin's still not sure about him. Mm-hmm. But like he gradually, like as he opens himself up to him, Kevin just sort of seems to realize, hey, you know what?
He's just
maybe some of these things that I used to think were horrible, you know, it's because I was seeing them as they were on the outside. And he feels the same way about his family. And I think it all works together super well.
We completely agree. High five. Yeah. Wow. All right, so let's talk about people getting hurt.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so how do we want to do this?
Let's do our favorite one and then the one that makes us cringe the most.
Makes us wince the most. Because cringing is like, oh, I can't believe they put this in the movie.
No, yeah, the one that makes you actually like, I feel that. Oh, God.
Right. Well, I gave away mine in the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like I should go first since I told y'all mine already.
Fair.
It would also be fun to guess, like name two and figure out which one.
Oh, I do like that.
Ooh,
okay.
Okay. Well, we'll have to fake mine, I guess.
All right, Chris.
I didn't tell you what my favorite one is.
All right, let us guess. Go ahead and tell us the one that hurt you the most, and then we'll guess your favorite.
I'm going to name two, and you have to figure out which one is the one I hate.
Oh, yeah,
no,
that was perfect. Yeah, that's good.
Okay, so one of them is the scene where, which one is the tall one that's
Marv,
dumb?
Marv.
One is the one where Marv, one is the one.
There's Marv and
there's
Joe
Marv.
Pesci.
Marv is going up the stairs, and it's covered in tar. And there's a nail in it, and his socks are slowly coming off, and his foot, just like you see it, like go into the foot. He picks it up and then he falls
it
down.
It goes a solid inch and a half or 2 inches into his foot. Like it's
he does so well with that scream too.
Oh
like,
my gosh!
I've seen him in other stuff and he does that scream and it's awesome.
So that's one.
That's one of them.
And what's your other one?
The other one is the flamethrower.
The flamethrower is legitimately amazing. I love the flamethrower.
He opens the door and it's just, and this is like probably one of the hammiest ones, ironically, because it's just hitting his head and it holds on the flamethrower for a second.
And he just sits there with it torching his head like, ah! For like a solid like 10 seconds before getting out from under it.
It's so good. And the way he like dives headfirst into the snow.
Oh, I'm going to guess that your favorite was the flamethrower.
Yeah.
And your least favorite was the nail.
That is accurate, but y'all knew that because I said it in the movie.
True.
That's true.
No, we're just really good guessers.
That's right.
So, Rick, you did something similar to me, so maybe you should go next.
All right, so one of the ones that has always, always stuck with me is the,
Wait, have to guess.
Yeah, I'm going to give you the two, and you can guess which one hurts me the most and which one is the one that I'm like, oh, I love this.
Gotcha.
The one that always sticks with me is when he puts his hand on the door and like burns the crap out of it, and he's got the M like implanted in it and has to, you know, stick that in.
Raiders of the Lost Ark style.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, he gets burnt a lot in this movie. Like, he definitely needs to go to the hospital by the end of this.
You got burnt.
And what's your other one?
My other one is one that I always forget happens. And that's the one at the end where they're trying to come across the top of the zip line and like scooting their way across, which again, on his hand, that would be so bad. I think I'm giving away the answer here, but and then Kevin cuts it in half and they, you know, Tarzan swing into the wall. Like that one, I always forget about it and I always love it, the moment when they realize, oh no, we've made a mistake. So, Benj, which one do you think is which?
Well, I think that you enjoy the second one, but the most painful one is the M.
Oh, it just looks so horrible the way it's burnt on his hand. Yes. Like, there was a time around the time when I was watching this movie constantly where I went to make a bowl of soup and the spoon slid into the bowl and I didn't realize that and I microwaved it. And when I went to go drink the soup, I pulled the spoon out of the thing and I was like, oh, I should get that out of there. And I burnt the crap out of my hand. And so I've always associated that moment with
that. I like
that
how young Rick dips his hand into a bowl of hot soup.
No, like with the spoon. I
Tiny Rick! Tiny Rick!
I'm adventurous, what can I say? That's not how you guys eat soup?
By microwaving a spoon?
Yeah, to get it warm.
No, I want to keep my microwave.
Yeah. No, if it's in the...
No,
if
it was
in
a plastic spoon, it melted into his soup.
No, if you have the spoon in the water...
Then it's even dumber than he trying to fish it out.
If you
it's
have
like, oh, I keep trying to get it!
It's like, instead of egg drop, it's like spoon drop soup.
The spoon in the noodles keeps it from messing the microwave up. Didn't you know that? Come on, physics.
So yeah, you give me all these silences, I give you silence.
My two are the M,
mm-hmm.
And one I always forget about is the light switch.
Oh, the light switch is good.
The iron.
Yeah.
Like, those are like one of those is like shudder worthy and the other one is like one I enjoy.
All right, so I'm going to guess purely because I want to, hoping that it's going to end up being different, that your one that you cringe at the most is the light switch one. No, you're just like Rick.
Well, I mean,
you both hate that one the most.
He also put a spoon into a bowl of soup and burned the crap out of himself.
You also went hunting for the Lost Ark.
Yes, I did. No, I used to work in a kitchen and would like occasionally burn myself on like just hot stuff, and it's just like
y'all
that
better.
One time, his scoop fell into the deep fryer, and he just put his arm into it up to the elbow.
And then I pulled it out, and then all that was left was
a delicious arm, a delicious deep fried arm. No, but like I see that, and I see third degree burns on your hand. Ugh. That you literally cannot use that hand for at least like a month and a half.
Yeah, it's
like that's
bad.
What I see when I see that.
There's no pain like a really bad burn.
So here's the thing. We've got one left, and it's the one who saw this movie for the first time, so this might be the most telling one. Josh, take it away.
All right, my two are the two buckets being swung down the stairs.
Okay.
And the dude climbing through the window who crushes all of the glass beneath his bare feet.
Ooh, okay. I think it's pretty obvious which one is which.
Which one's which, Rick?
I'm going to say that you clearly think that the paint buckets to the face is the cringy one. Like that just, you know, I know you lost a tooth in a terrible paint bucket accident as a child, and you really associate that with that paint.
You know me too well. I really miss my gold tooth.
No, the stepping on the glass is just horrifying.
Yeah, like I have stepped on glass before, and once it's in there, it's one of those, like, there are plenty of injuries that through home remedies you can fix yourself, right? Like, oh, I got a burn, I'm gonna put cold water over it and put Neosporin, you know, whatever you're supposed to do for a burn, or I got a cut, so I'm gonna clean it out and put a Band-Aid on it or something like that. But like, if you get glass in you, especially in the feet, you don't fix that yourself. You go to the hospital and get them to remove it for you.
True story. I had a corner from a broken bottle go through my foot while running a cross-country race. Oh. I finished the race. May have been the most badass moment of my whole life. I didn't realize what was going on. I was just like, what the hell is wrong with my foot?
How far did you have to go to finish?
It was like, it was probably like, it wasn't far. So it was like 300 yards left. So it wasn't far, but still, I fell down at the finish line and looked behind me, and there was a trail of blood. I was like, I was in so much pain. Then I saw that, and I was like, oh yeah, I'm totally Kurt Russell.
I always wondered how you lost your foot.
Yeah, that's right. Why.
Good old club foot, Chris.
Yep, there it is.
Yes, the glass in the feet is by far my least favorite. And I don't know, there's something about the Three Stooges-ness slapstick of just Marv getting hit in the face of the bucket and then Joe Pesci like turning around and scolding him before turning around and immediately getting a bucket in the face as well.
It's so good.
It cracks me up. Like, I think it's really funny.
I definitely agree. So, we ready to get into ratings, or is there anything else we want to talk about?
I mean, we already talked about the snow shovel guy and pretty much just the end. Oh, we got to talk about the fact that the mom went through all this trouble to get home. And then it's like, oh, they couldn't make it, and they all show up, and it's like, I just wasted literally a lot of money, gave away half of the possessions I had on me at the time, and got
here. Yeah, there's no way she's not pissed.
Well, to be fair, they're clearly obscenely rich. They can get that jewelry back.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
They're wealthy enough where it won't hurt.
Yeah, exactly. That's sure. All I'm saying. Like, it's very annoying, but I guess maybe in the moment of like, oh, it's Christmas. That was our Christmas miracle. I did stupid things and it turned out all right.
Sure.
Yeah, no.
We'll look over it.
And I got to be friends with John Candy, Pokemaster.
I mean, to be fair, like, that would make the whole journey worth it. It's like, Kevin, I'm so glad I finally got reunited with you, but I finally got to meet up with that famous polka band from Sheboygan I love so much.
Also, your father and I are getting a divorce so I can marry John Candy.
There you go. There you go. I don't think that's how it ended.
No.
But there you go anyway.
Yeah.
So ratings.
That's funny I left the kids.
Do we do best scene? We kind of did best scene.
Yeah, I mean, is anyone here not picking either best scene as something involving, you know, getting hurt?
Oh,
or
yeah.
Mine is
legitimately in the church.
Yeah.
That's mine.
Mm-hmm. Same.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. We all agree. We talked about the scene. We're good.
Wait, what about least favorite scene? Because I'm the only one who's hated on anything, really, I feel like. So... least favorite scene, but the scene you mentioned, Josh, is probably my least favorite scene. The throwing your hands up, like, oh my gosh, can't stand it. Absolutely cannot stand it. And that's all I have to say about that.
My least favorite scene, I'm probably going to catch flack for, but is the mom meeting up with and riding back with John Candy and the polka band.
Do you not like polka?
I do feel like there is at least one too many scenes there, because that was also going to be involved in mine.
Oh man, what?
It doesn't feel like it fits for me. I like John Candy. Nothing against him, and I think he plays the role fine. But I don't know. Just like, I don't need to hear them. I don't need to hear him going around explaining why all his polka bandmates are bad dads and like all the like. I don't care, and that's only dragging it down.
You like, also weren't like super invested in the mom story either.
So, no, I wasn't. So I would have been fine. I would have been fine if it had cut with, yeah, you're fine to ride along with us. And she's like, oh, thank you so much. And then they pull up to the house and polka music's playing. And she like gets out of the car with frizzy hair like, oh, gosh, I'm glad to be out of there. That kind of thing. Right.
Right.
Like, I would have been fine with that. I didn't need the whole scene with them going through and talking about all their crap.
For someone who hasn't slept or showered in several, several days, she looks remarkably good at the end of this journey.
Keeping it together.
Seriously.
I think everything happens like within 2 or 3 days.
Well, at one point she says she's been awake for 60 hours, and then that's like, well, before she gets in the thing with the
When they land in Paris, they say that there is another flight, but it's not for two more days. And then the family shows up right as mom gets home. So that implies that it's been almost exactly like 2.5 days.
Okay.
Right. And then we assume that part of that 60 days is her being awake on the flight there.
Yeah.
As well. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, this whole thing takes place in like a 3-day span.
Yeah.
He's home alone for a weekend.
But like, I just... That I can
yeah that
like,
hurts
I,
my heart
yeah like I can understand like the whole him talking like about Polka in the airport, but like that scene with the two of them just talking in the U-Haul, like I love that scene.
I love that
one of the examples is he's never even met his kid, and the mom's like, yeah, but you never left him. And he's like, yeah. And he, when he says, yeah, he's like, yeah, that is worse. Like, worse than not knowing your kid at all?
No.
I love that bit.
I would have been fine. Because it basically is just a John Candy cameo for the amount of time that he has in it.
That's fair.
And I would have been fine with that being, like, throw in a couple more jokes at the airport. Fine. Whatever. But, I don't need the whole scene in the van.
I feel like, and I mean, I don't have any examples on hand to back this up. I feel like the random... awkward, like unusual Good Samaritan is almost like somewhat of like a part of like it feels like a Christmas movie thing to happen. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like I can't think of an example offhand, but
it
seems like something that, yeah, sure. That's a good example.
No. That's fine. But I'm fine with him being the Good Samaritan at the airport. I don't need the Good Samaritan to later tell me I'm a Good Samaritan, but also I'm off like we're all awful parents.
That's fair. That's fair.
All right, so Benj, do you have a least favorite scene?
I was trying to think of like my least favorite scene, and it would probably have to be like, and it's not even just like the scene; it's just like everybody in his family for the first like 5 minutes of the movie.
Oh yeah,
are just like the worst family. They are so terrible to him for no reason. Like I can understand if the cousins. And the, like, brothers and sisters are, like, mean and picking on him because he's the youngest. And the other one will pee in their bed if
Man,
like,
I do want to call out that kid with that look when he drinks the Pepsi and he just turns to Kevin and, like,
yes.
Kevin, I like to pee on people. That's what that look says. Like, yeah. I'm doing this intentionally. I will be awake when I pee on you.
He totally grows up to be a perv. We all understand that and can see that look in his eyes. But, like, the mom and dad are both, like, really mean to him.
Yeah, but
they're,
the aunt and uncle.
Busy.
You know, like, the uncle is an... objectively horrible person.
Right.
Yeah, the uncle is there to make things seem worse. Yeah. Like, that's what his role serves.
Yeah. He's a trash person.
To everybody's, like, can all agree that that is the worst person in the movie, arguably, just because of how terrible of a human being.
Oh, yeah, he's worse than the wet gang or whatever.
Yeah, I agree.
But you're going to do it wrong every time.
The soggy bandits.
The moist bandits.
But I can't stand, like, they're just so mean to him for, like, practically no reason other than he's the youngest and doesn't know how to do stuff because he's younger than them.
He's not even the youngest either. Like, there's two little kids.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's him, but Fuller or whatever.
He's the youngest of his siblings.
Of his siblings, yeah.
Sure. But, no, I agree. Like, they're all awful people for being so mean.
And it just makes no sense.
And on Christmas!
Yeah.
So, yeah, well, for me, it's John Candy in the airport. It goes on a little too long. Like, that's the least favorite scene that I have, and it's not a bad scene by any means. I'm just trying to pick out one that I was kind of like, okay, can we move it along a little bit? And him kind of going through all his polka hits is a little too much for me. But, you know, he's charming in the scene, and I like it, so, you know.
Sure. But
you had to pick out a scene. Yeah, exactly. Sure. So, yeah. All right, so we get into ratings now?
That sounds good.
All right, Josh needs to go last since this is his first time. So, Chris, why don't you tell us what you thought?
Okay. Like, this is not really a favorite for me, but I'm not going to lie and say, like, I did not laugh out loud heartily at several moments. But unfortunately, this is one of those movies I look at. I sort of look at it more like an episode of, like, SNL, where, like, the whole episode may not be good, but there may be, like, a sketch or two that are classic in that episode that I'll remember for the rest of my life, you know? And that makes it actually really hard for me to rate because I want to like give those moments and those like those inspirational ideas their due credence. But at the same time, I don't want to reward stuff that I feel like for me was bad. And you know, we talk about the difference between like taste and perspective and bias like a lot, but it's really hard to address when it might be coming from you and or from yourself, I mean. I just gotta be like kind of honest. And this movie is kind of like a 3-star movie for me. Like which I've said before, like I feel like that's not a bad rating for a movie. I think that that's like that's like a C+ if you break it down numerically. It's more than average.
You clearly had different parents than I did.
Yeah, you're still getting grounded for that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah.
Well, here's the thing. I also feel that way about movies. Like I want to push movies to succeed, and when they fall out of
C. And the way we do that is by giving 20-year-old movies arbitrary ratings.
But like, I mean, that's how I feel. Like I'm disappointed when I see a movie that does not, you know, blow my mind. But you know, a 3-star movie is not the type of thing I can look at and be like, this is a bad movie. I can just say like, it's a fondly remembered mediocre movie. Like that's how I feel about it. So yeah, that's me.
Are you not gonna rate it? A three what?
Oh yeah, 3 burning hats.
All right.
I watching it now, like the nostalgia for me is still there, but watching it as an adult, thinking, oh, he slipped down the stairs and he fell on his back, and now he probably won't really walk right for the next 2 or 3 days just because he probably threw his back out because of those steps.
Or he shattered his spine and he's paralyzed for life.
Exactly. Like some of those things, like it puts a twist on it. Like it doesn't maybe lessen the movie for me, but it's like, ooh, ouch, I actually can feel that pain. Whereas a kid, I was just like, ha ha, he was hurt. Like now I can like kind of almost like, not that I've fallen down like a flight of stairs or anything.
Now you're an old man and your back hurts.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I have that feeling. But like, it's still so enjoyable, especially for like the small moments and the small things now, where it's like I would want to skip through them before, like, you know, anything that involved the snow shovel guy. Like I was like, okay, don't care about this. But now I appreciate those more. But same thing on the other side, some of the hammy moments, you know, where he's running through the house, like, with his hands waving in the air. I was like, as a kid, I thought that was awesome. Now, not so much. So it kind of like evens out for me, like with some of the hammy moments not being as fun, but some of the other moments, like the more intimate moments, I appreciate a lot more than I did. So I would probably have to say that I would give this probably 4 flaming hats out of 5.
Gotcha. Cool.
For the movie that it is.
Right. Yeah. And you know, you say for the movie that it is, and that's sort of where I'm coming from as well. The thing for me about this movie is, you know, I clearly, from the discussion we've had, I loved this movie as a kid, and it's been a long time since I've watched it. And coming back to it was very interesting to me because I still felt like I knew every single beat that happened in the movie. And the thing for me watching it now is that my enjoyment, you know, sometimes when you come back to a movie after years, you don't like it as much. You see things differently and you see like cracks in the movie or things that don't work as well. But for me, honestly, this movie works even better for me than it did when I was a kid. There's a lot more depth to it than I remembered. And I mean, I'm not trying to say that it's like an incredibly deep movie, but that scene in the church is legitimately moving to me. And it wasn't to me as a kid, and I didn't have that experience or the experience to really appreciate what was going on there. And so while I've been sitting here this whole time, I've been like, there's got to be something I can fault this movie strongly enough to take off a point for it. But I honestly can't think of anything that didn't work for me well enough to, you know, to legitimately take away a point. So I'm giving this a... Yeah, I'm giving this a 5 broken Christmas ornaments in the foot.
What?
5 stars.
You're giving Home Alone okay, 5 and, stars?
Well, I mean that I'm telling you, this is based on the shocked. Way that I'm trying to judge this movie of, is it doing successfully what it's attempting to do? And everything that it's attempting to do works perfectly for me. There's nothing in it that is bad enough that I can say it fumbles. Now
I'm going to hold you to that standard when I force you to watch some art films.
To be fair, Now, I'm not putting this as like this number, this five is not the same five that, you know, I gave The Thing. Like, that is a better movie to me, and it has a higher ranking because it's trying to do something that is, in my opinion, more difficult. It's trying to do something different from this. So it's not as weighty a five, if that makes sense, because this movie is not as weighty a movie as a lot of other movies are. Does that follow to you guys? Do you understand what I'm trying to get across?
It's okay. An easier five to get than other movies?
Yeah, sort of. I mean,
it's low-hanging fruit. Is that what you're trying to say?
It's a low-hanging
fruit.
And five.
I will be completely honest. Low this five. May be the nostalgia talking. Like,
a low-hanging five.
But I legitimately cannot think of anything in this movie that took me out of it or that I didn't on some level enjoy. So,
I got a low-hanging five for you.
All right.
I can't believe you gave it a three. Like, there's a part of me that legitimately wants to slap you in the face for it.
I can't believe you think... Well, to me, if you're going to give it a five, you have to defend saying that it's the same level as The Thing. Like, that's to me what made me shocked, because I'm you're putting those in the same level.
On the tier of it is doing a thing and it is succeeding perfectly to my mind, yes.
It's like
all right.
they are a five-star JV league versus this is a five-star professional league.
Yeah, basically.
I just, in my mind, no, I can't
fathom. That explains
it. Yeah, that's
you
basically,
gave
that's almost
Home
exactly
Alone
right.
a 5 out of 5, and you crapped on Psycho so much. Like, I can't, like, I don't know.
But here's the thing, like, I feel like Psycho is way more uneven, and even the director of Psycho, we talked about that in that podcast, the director of Psycho didn't care about the second half of Psycho. Like, even he was like, okay, after this big scene, you know, whatever. I don't feel like that's unfair. Do you?
I mean, for me, my thing is purely the, I'm giving this a soft five. Like, that to me caught me really off guard. I was like, okay.
Rick, you know what's really surprising to me? I know we're kind of cutting into Josh right now, but, like, we ragged on so much for not liking the movie, and now it's like, what's more egregious is the fact that you gave this a 5 out of 5. Almost.
I mean, again, though, I'm not an art critic. Like, that's not the type of thing that I go into. When we go to David Lynch films and that kind of thing, I'm sure I'm going to get some real hate for my opinions on those because they're not going to be good.
I'm just saying that from now on, for every episode in this podcast,
well,
director's intent
alone.
Is now something I'm going to judge you for if you don't weigh it into your rating.
Yeah, I try to always have director's intent in mind. Sometimes I think they succeed and sometimes I don't. And sometimes right. I think those intents are more worthy than other intents.
Look, all we get to do now is whenever we review other movies, we just get to say,
well you gave Home Alone 5 out of 5.
How does this stack up against Home Alone?
And this is a classic movie that's beloved by millions. So I don't feel bad about that. Like, sorry. More people have probably seen this today.
So
than
is the Fast
people.
And the Furious.
I agree. Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm just saying, like, more people have probably seen and loved this movie than have seen and loved Citizen Kane that are alive today.
That is actually totally fair. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
all right.
I don't feel bad about it.
You shouldn't. You shouldn't feel bad about your own opinion. No. But I feel bad for you.
Well, Chris, you love Fast and the Furious, so we're mutual
there.
It's a
great movie.
All right. I am not tied to this movie through any sort of nostalgia. This is my first time seeing it. I watched this as a kid, and this is my opinion then lens to see it through. So I'm watching this as a 20-somethings adult, and that's the only lens I have to see this movie through. One of the things that I liked most about this movie was that Christmas movies will often have like a more pronounced moral to the movie than other movies will. Like, oh, this is what you should have learned from this Christmas movie, that kind of thing. And I liked that in this one, the big moral was the importance of resolving conflicts with your family. And I liked that they did it on two levels, which you could see and understand as a little kid watching it, right? You see Kevin go through the fight with his mom and his family, and as little kids, you're like, hey, I fight with my family. And then by the end of the movie, they're all, you know, they're happy to see him. Even the older brother who picks on him is like, hey, you know, it's cool you didn't burn the place down, right? And I like that that's there. And then the same moral is there for the adult watchers who see it through Snow Shovel Guy, You know, and that's also a very real conflict that happens in a lot of families, is there are fallings out, and a lot of times that results in families not talking to each other for extended periods of time. And I really like that. And I think, I forget who said it earlier, but I think that's one of the things that kind of cements movies as a classic, is they have that really heartwarming scene that ties it together. And I really like that. It is also slapstick in a lot of ways that I find funny, but also in a lot of ways that are kind of cheesy at times. It's a good movie. I enjoyed it. I don't know that it's one that I'd watch all the time or even every Christmas, but it was a good movie. I'm going to give it 3.5 out of 5 Burning Hats.
Cool.
Josh, did Burning Hats last through all four rounds?
No, Rick screwed it up.
What did you give it as?
Broken Christmas ornaments.
Golden goblets! Like,
right.
Josh, are you trying to say that the thing about, like, the importance of this movie, like, the main theme of this movie is the importance of family?
Familia?
Of family.
Yeah, this movie
there are
way
cars
more
in this movie.
This movie did. This is the best Fast and Furious movie.
I see a lot of good. I mean, the Micro Machines is a subtle reference. That's subtle,
right.
Inspired.
John Hughes is a time traveler.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I would say John Hughes is actually, like,
the best director of a Fast and Furious movie ever. Yes.
I really like John Hughes movies.
Yeah.
To me, this is like, it's so funny. Like, this is his biggest hit and probably my least favorite John Hughes movie.
Really?
Like, I love The Breakfast Club. Like, I think that's, like, a perfect movie. I love Uncle Buck, and I kind of like 16 Candles. Oh, it's so good. But to me, like, they're so different to me. Like, this movie and almost everything else I've seen of him is, it's
like the
strange
only thing that
to
can
me
be
how
close,
different they
I think
are.
Is Uncle Buck is the closest thing. And
I think he did Weird Science. That's kind of hammy. Like, have you seen Weird Science?
Yeah.
Did he do Home Alone 2?
Yeah.
Home Alone 3?
No, he
definitely
not.
Home Alone
4?
No. Yeah, I don't
not
think
five
so.
Either.
What about 5?
No.
Yes.
Actually, he came back.
He bookended it. He bookended the series.
No, John Hughes died like 2 years ago, I think. Maybe
rip in peace, John Hughes.
Rip in peace, John Hughes. All right, guys. Well, this was the Christmas episode of Opinionated. Woo! Spend time with your families. Have a good holiday.
Holly
Enjoy
jolly.
Your friends. And what's a Christmassy thing to say? Or a Home Alone-y thing to say? Or a holiday thing to say?
Keep the change, you filthy animal.
Oh, that's pretty good. We should all do that. All right, on three, we're going to say that. 1, 2... Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Opinionated. For more episodes and some fun polls that you can vote in, why not check out our website at opinionatedpodcast.com. If you have an opinion of your own, why not shoot it to us through email at opinionatedmoviereviews@gmail.com. To keep the why not question train going, why not leave us a positive review on the iTunes store if you're enjoying listening to this podcast? It really helps us out a lot and is actually the best way to support what we're doing. Thanks so much, and why not have a very happy holiday? We'll see y'all in the new year with the review of Home Alone 2.